Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
A very good evening to you, and thank you so much for joining us this evening. I'm on the line with a leading legal scholar and an analyst of peace and security and current affairs and African Union affairs. That's Commissioner Dr. Solomon Terso, who serves as a commissioner of the African Union Commission on Human and People's Rights, as we would call it, African Commission. He's assigned to several states, including especially South Africa, which is very much of interest to us. And one of the things that we wanted to just get his take on is the draft treaty that every country is taking a look at on crimes against humanity. We all know we've been having this conversation for a while, where certain states are looking at the codification of apartheid. I do want to welcome and thank you so much for being with us, Commissioner Terso, and welcome to Point of View here on Kaya.
Thank you very much for having me.
Commissioner Terso, you were part of an expert peer conversation on the issue of submissions, particularly by South Africa, on the codification of apartheid. How significant is this moment in international law?
I think the process towards consolidating the international legal regime that governs various crimes that are committed in various contexts is a very important exercise. This comes against the background of particularly over the course of the past 3 to 4 decades, very significant developments in international law towards codifying international crimes. We have seen that particularly within the framework, for example, of the adoption of the Rome Statute on the International Criminal Court, which has actually for the first time instituted an international judicial body dedicated to international crimes, in a departure from the past, where international crimes were dealt with through ad hoc establishment of courts dedicated to specific situations, such as the International Court for the crimes committed in Rwanda or that of the Yugoslavia.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the crimes, such as, for example, genocide, they have been codified through, for example, the 1948 Convention on the Prevention of the Crime of Genocide. War crimes have also been codified in various forms under international law, but that of crimes against humanity, although it has been found to be addressed, such as through the Rome Statute, it hasn't been, you know, comprehensively and systematically codified. So the initiative towards codifying an international treaty on the prevention and punishment of crimes against humanity fits into this legal articulation of robust international norms towards addressing the crime of international crimes, particularly mass atrocity crimes, which lead to very heinous crimes committed at scale, affecting large number of people in a systematic way. I think that is really the value and contribution of this, this initiative, of which obviously the crime of apartheid, again, I think it's not completely new. It's worth mentioning that there is already a convention on the crime of on the crime of apartheid already, and now it's a question of integrating it into the convention that is being considered and whose development has been agreed by consensus by member states of the United Nations towards the development of this convention. So it is really not a completely new initiative in that sense, since the crime of in apartheid have a dedicated instrument in that respect. But it's a question of now, in the light of the development of this convention against on the crime of on the crime against humanity, whether asking the question whether and how to adapt and indeed make the prohibition of the crime of apartheid relevant to and is able to respond to the needs and demands of the changing environment and the changing context. So it is about really,
Just for our own context, won't you just briefly maybe, you know, talk to us about the mandate of the African Commission on Human Rights and People's Rights and your role in the regional body, specifically in relation to South Africa?
Yeah, so the African Commission on Human and People's Rights is the premier human rights body in the African human rights system. The African human rights system is one of the three major regional human rights systems that includes the European human rights system and the Inter-American human rights system covering North America and South America. And the African human rights system is the third regional human rights system. And the African Commission is the first of such bodies to be established in Africa at a continental scale on the basis of the founding human rights treaty, that is the African Charter on Human and People's Rights, which was adopted in 1979 and then came into force in 1981. And then, of course, the African Commission became operational in 1987. So it is really the body that is interested under the African Charter, which, by the way, has nearly universal ratification by member states of the African Union, except one. And it empowers the African Commission on Human and People's Rights to monitor, promote, and protect the rights and freedoms enshrined in the African Charter on Human and People's Rights. And it's interesting to note that the African Charter is pioneer in international human rights treaties in terms of, for example, ending the divide between civil and political rights that had historically wide support in the Western world, economic, social, and cultural rights that historically had wide support in the so-called socialist camp and were instituted through different treaties in international law. And before international and within the UN system, the indivisibility of these rights was recognized. The African Charter already gave equal legal status to civilian political rights as well as economic, social, and cultural rights. And it's also pioneer in recognizing what are called collective rights of peoples as part and parcel of the international protection of human rights. So what we do as the African Commission is basically to ensure that member states who signed up and ratified the treaty live up to the commitment that they have made through adopting legislation at the national level and through adopting institutional and other legal measures, as well as through putting in place enforcement mechanisms for those rights recognized in the Charter, including through the establishment and provision of full jurisdiction to national courts in order for national courts to play the role of adjudicating and giving force to those rights, and through the establishment of national human rights institutions like the South African Human Rights Commission, for example. That we play through various means. One of them is we are 11 members of the African Commission, mm-hmm. and we cover the entire continent by individual members of the Commission being assigned responsibility to monitor the human rights situation of a select number of countries. Mm-hmm. I am a country reporter for South Africa. Mm-hmm. In that capacity, I follow human rights developments in South Africa mm-hmm. and initiate engagement with South Africa on those human rights developments affecting the human rights situation in South Africa. Engage in undertaking, for example, promotion mission. Mm. We did one promotion mission to South Africa where we came and spent a number of days engaging and, of course, gauging as well the state of human rights in South Africa. And we produced a report on identifying what the major human rights issues that require the attention of various stakeholders in South Africa, particularly national stakeholders. And I also serve in various portfolios in the African Commission, one of which relates to being a focal point of the African Commission on human rights situations in conflict. So that is how I actually come to this discussion around the development of the treaty on the the convention on crimes against humanity.
Just quickly, I mean, I haven't had a conversation on that report. Just at the top of the list of what was a concern in South Africa with regards to human rights, can you maybe mention one or two of those concerns?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of human rights issues in South Africa, the most issues relating to, for example, the state of socioeconomic access to socioeconomic rights. Mm. That is top of the list. The level of inequality in South Africa, particularly in the issues relating to land, access to land, and indeed redress around the question of equity in access and ownership of land in South Africa, overcoming the legacies of apartheid, obviously, the treatment of, the state of women rights in South Africa, because it was also our engagement observation relating to the state of gender-based violence in South Africa. We have quite a long list of issues that we have identified and engaged in, including the structure of the South African economy as it relates, among others, to, for example, the mining sector, right? So, and its implications for socioeconomic justice.
Let's go back to the issue of the draft treaty, and you were present in the 2-day conference in South Africa where there was a peer workshop and a dialogue among experts on the issue and the submissions by South Africa. Just maybe give me your sense of what you made of that that conference, your observations, your reflections, and the role that South Africa will be playing in their own submission and how significant that will be.
Well, I think I come to this, as I described, from a certain vantage point, and that is the responsibility entrusted to me by the Commission in respect of human rights in conflict situations, which cover in the African region, some of these, including crimes against humanity, massive violations that often, of course, crimes against humanity doesn't necessarily require the existence of a conflict for it to happen, but often it arises and is perpetrated in the context of conflict. But from a historical perspective, I think for Africa, Africa's history is also informed and it is colored by the perpetration of these events. So whether that is, you know, in the context of the long history of slavery and how that most horrific violence inflicted on people of the continent and its continuing legacy, certainly that scale of, you know, enslavement of people wouldn't have happened without it also involving the perpetration of crimes against humanity, and indeed its recognition in the conference that was held against racism in South Africa, as such, as one of the most horrific acts of violence in history, right? And then the violations that happened in the course of colonialism on the continent, whether you consider what happened in the DRC or even in places such as Namibia, you clearly see that there is very profound historical context for us on the African continent to ensure that the articulation of this convention is cognizant of and takes due account of these histories of the continent as well. That is important in order for the convention to be universally, you know, owned and to have that universal support. And of course, this doesn't mean that we have to anchor it only that history, but we have also, of course, to link it to what is happening today as well. Right? Yeah. So when we look at that, events such as in places such as Sudan, I mean, it's one thing that we need to indeed continue to be preoccupying ourselves in. And South Africa, other country that more than any experienced it in so systematic way, the crime of apartheid, indeed is best placed and is the most authoritative voice on this matter. And I'm not surprised that South Africa takes a lead on this aspect of the development of the convention in particular. And I think that would give the convention enormous, not just legal, historical, but also moral weight, having regard to the fact that it is informed by the experience of South Africa, but also, importantly, the perspective that South Africa is able to bring to bear on the understanding of this crime of apartheid as it gets written into this convention on crimes against humanity. So I think, you know, this is indeed a very significant moment from that perspective, in the light also of the role increasingly that countries in Africa and in the global south have been taking in respect to international law. So here, the role of, you know, African countries is also critical, such as that of the Gambia.
So, you know, I just want you to talk us through the African Commission's November 2024 resolution, you know, speaking of what's currently happening right now. And this was a resolution on the occupied Palestinian territory calling on all African states to, I'll quote it, to act on their responsibility to prevent genocide and not to aid and abet the commission of crimes against humanity, including apartheid. And you know how African states have been faring in responding to this resolution?
The African Charter, you know, on human and people's rights, is not just, you know, a normative document in that sense. It is also, a treaty that goes on and is informed by the founding of the continent as the preamble of the Charter puts it. Basically, pasting it from, copying and pasting it from the OU Charter. And that question and struggle has been a struggle for dignity, freedom, justice, and equality. These are the values that underpin the African Charter, which is the founding treaty of the African human rights system. And indeed, because of that history, there is a connection between the African Charter, despite being a regional instrument, it had also that internationalist disposition and internationalist dimension to it. In recognizing the interdependence of the freedom of, you know, countries in the world, and indeed Africa's quest and struggle for freedom, including freedom from apartheid. So it comes against the background of that, and indeed the recognition, including within the framework of the African Union, of the impact that it has on the African territory, particularly through the connection it has via Egypt. So it comes against the background of that, and of course, also against the background of the recognition of the interdependence and indivisibility of the collective rights of peoples, and indeed the expressed, you know, norms of the African Charter on Human and People's Rights, including its preamble. So you can also find, I think, you know, this is also one of the things that we have been discussing in Johannesburg when we met for this expert meeting on this convention at the Nelson Mandela Foundation, that, you know, there is a very solid legal basis for the engagement of African countries on these causes. And this comes from the African Union Grand Norm, which is the Constitutive Act establishing the African Union itself. And then this is, if you like, the foundation on which the African Union legal regime and institutional regime is built. And it clearly recognizes and indeed commits the African Union and the member states of the African Union that signed this treaty to the responsibility of making sure that war crimes, crimes against humanity and genocide are prohibited, are, do not take place, you know. And you clearly find this in Article 4H of the Constitutive Act of the African Union. So you have a very solid legal basis and foundation for the engagement of African Union member states in terms of really bringing the experience, the specific experience of the continent to bear on the development and articulation of this international legal standard. And it's critical that this experience informs the articulation of this convention so that in a way that ensures also that, you know, this instrument would be implemented free from double standard and selective application. Mm-hmm. That is critical mm-hmm. for the legitimacy of mm-hmm. this instrument. Mm-hmm. And so there are quite really very important reasons, historical, legal, and indeed political reasons for Africa to take an active part in this process and to see to it that it is, you know, a process that would have the interest, that would have the voice of everyone for its effective implementation without in a way that is not selective and that actually reflects double standards.
So in your upcoming ordinary session of the African Commission, and I believe it's going to be in October, November this year, I think in Darfur, will this be on the agenda? And how do we make sure that not only, you know, is this discussed at the African Commission level, but, you know, by all of us, civil society, the media and the like, and that, you know, representatives take it right back to their constituency. Will this be on the agenda? And what are your suggestions in making sure that everybody gets to talk about this UN draft treaty?
Well, obviously, I think, you know, there are one of the ways in which this would feature on the agenda of the next session is when I present my intersession activity report to the Commission. It would certainly feature within that context. And it is possible, for example, among others, I mean, this is just the minimum, you know.
Yes.
During that presentation, for member states, for civil society organizations, actually, to engage my report as I present, and then make intervention during that formal, you know, engagement and meeting. That is one. The other possibility, which you know is yet to be concretized and looked at, depending on the format of the meeting that we will have, which had yet to be decided, is the possibility of bringing and working with a few stakeholders for having a convening around this in the context of that session of the African Commission of Human and People's Rights. But this depends on whether or not we will have an in-person, you know, session of the of the Commission. But this is something that we plan to work towards. But there are different other forms of engagement, obviously. This interview that I'm having with you, the convening that happened in Joburg the other week, and I would imagine that the possibility of also looking into and engaging member states of the African Union, particularly at the AU headquarters in Addis Ababa, all of these I think need to be adequately explored. And I'm happy for the question that you raised around the involvement and participation of the wider African public.
Yes.
I think the role that this kind of media, you know, follow-up and engagement plays in that respect is critical, and we need to have more of this. It's also important that the work that has been done in Joburg wouldn't be left us and with those who participated. And there is a question that we need to ask: how many people in Africa and how many civil society organizations are actually engaged in mobilizing and engaging mobilizing the engagement of the wider African public and even member states of the African Union? Of course, I know that member states are engaged and participate, but not here on the continent. Their participation and engagement so far, from what I see, was and remains to be in New York, where there is an Africa group that actually is active and dynamic in advancing a collective view on various policy issues that are considered in the UN in New York. But I think we need to have an engagement here on the continent on such strategic questions and issues such as this one.
Well, non-participation of Africans, I think, would be a totally lost opportunity. And so we obviously hope and really hope that all of this gets to trickle down to the ordinary African citizen. But really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us, Commissioner Dersu. And hopefully, you know, we'll have a follow-up conversation with you after that ordinary session of the African Commission that will be held later on this year. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. Commissioner of the African Commission on Human and People's Rights, Commissioner Dr. Solomon Dersu, and who's also a country rapporteur in South Africa. Really, really important. And I think this is why we're having these conversations, just to have a really good sense of how involved we are, how much we understand what this is about. And this is about us, right? We experienced apartheid. And I think as the country that experienced apartheid and is really responsible for initially helping the world coin apartheid, I think it's very, very important for us to be a part of this conversation and to influence it as much as possible. We do not want to see, in the end, a treaty about us without us. That, for me, is what I think is really, really key. So we continue with that conversation, and we're looking forward to your reaction. 086-000-00959.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.